Alrighty, guys, welcome back to the Left of Straight Show Interviews, the premier podcast that shares the stories of our amazing LGBTQ community and, of course, fantastic straight allies, all from entertainment, foodies, books, music, and advocacy. I'm your host, as always, Scott Fullerton, and let's start talking. Well, hello, everyone. Today, we have the pleasure of hosting Hervé Lévy, the esteemed general manager and chief operating officer of the Magic Castle in Los Angeles, California. It's a position that underlines his remarkable career and contributions to both the business and entertainment sectors. Hervé's work has been instrumental in preserving the legacy of the Magic Castle, a Los Angeles institution cloaked in mystery and revered by magic enthusiasts worldwide. The Magic Castle remains a pivotal part of Los Angeles' cultural entertainment landscape, right there in the Hollywood Hills. And his leadership and innovative approach has brought him amazing successes in Southern California and Missouri. And if you listen close, you just might recognize Hervé's strong Midwest accent, or not. Let's take a look.
The Magic Castle in Hollywood, California is a private clubhouse for magicians and magic enthusiasts, and the home of the Academy of Magical Arts. The castle was founded by brothers Milt and Bill Larson, the sons of magician William Larson Sr. and his wife Irene Larson. The Academy of Magical Arts was incorporated in 1961, and the castle opened its doors on January 2, 1963. Since then, it has become known as the Mecca for magicians throughout the world. Its membership has grown to about 5,000 active magicians and non-magician members. The Magic Castle harkens back to the olden days of film and magic. It's nestled in the Hollywood Hills and still maintains a strict dress code to relive that Hollywood glamour.
Well, Hervé, welcome to the show, sir. I'm so happy to have you here. We've been trying for a while to get you done. Vicky and I, your good friend and mine, has been trying to get you on here, and we kind of muffed it the first time, but we finally made it. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
I am excited to have you. Of course, I'm from LA. I've been what I call banished to Northeast Ohio here for the last 25 years, but I'm very familiar with the Magic Castle in LA. I can't wait to talk to you all about it, but first let's get into some of the questions I ask my first time guests here on the show. Let me know a little bit about you. Tell me about where you grew up and what kind of a kid were you?
Of course, I was. I grew up in France, in southern Pyrenees area, which is the Basque country. I was there up to my 20th birthday, and then decided to move to America afterwards. What kind of kid I was? More like the shy kind of kid, someone who was very introvert, didn't want to get out of his shell. And, you know, was not very social. I was always worried to have, you know, my friends, my peers to judge me every time I was saying something. So I was very quiet on the corner.
Gotcha. I understand. A lot of us are like that way, for sure. And talk about, you're a proud gay man. Talk about, when did you first kind of start coming out to yourself? And when do you feel you kind of first started finding your LGBTQ tribe?
You know, it's a loaded question because I was married with a woman for 12 years and I had two wonderful kids. And you know, we live in Southern California, moved to Kansas City for a little bit, and I moved back to Southern California. And back in then, when I was 37 years old, or 36 years old, I decided that, you know, I couldn't live a lie anymore. I needed to get out there and kind of be myself. So, you know, after speaking with one of my best friends, who was really the only gay man that I knew, I decided to come out to my then wife and my kids. It was the hardest part that I had to do in my life, the hardest, not only, you know, revelation, but also like the dealing with the repercussion was absolutely insane. You know, like when you grow up as a straight, I guess, straight facing, and then you try to be feeding everyone's life except yours, you feel empty inside. You always try to fit everybody's schedule, try to fit everybody's, you know, like image of what a couple should be. So yes, I had, you know, beautiful wife, beautiful kids, pickup truck and a Labrador, but I was still empty inside. So I think, you know, when I was 36, 37, I decided to, okay, this is now for me to do it. My best friend, that now is actually my husband. It's funny.
Wow.
I decided to come out to him. He helped me out with the process, and here I am.
That is amazing. Well, and my best friend, same thing. He got married young and had kids, but I'm almost a little envious because he has such a great relationship now with his kids. It was very hard at first, but to be able to kind of have that, both of those kind of worlds is nice. Are you able to reconcile and you have a good relationship with everyone?
Yes. So it took about 2 years for us to turn the page. You know, the kids were, you know, small. They were like, I believe, you know, 7 and 5. So it was very hard for them to understand why daddy was leaving home. So I felt like a jerk. I felt like, you know, a lot of different words that I cannot, you know, tell you right now. But I was, I fell through a huge depression because I was feeling guilty about leaving the family. But after those 2 years, after a lot of therapies from everybody's side, you know, my ex-wife found someone, I found someone, the kids kind of grew up, and actually my son, you know, came out as well. So my wow. son now is, yeah, he came out as 13 years old. So during that process, it was actually a blessing in the sky for him because now he knows that he was safe to come out at 13. He was safe to be himself and not being judged by his parents. And I think that's what you fear the most, especially when you come out as a teenager.
Oh, that's a great story. And I love that you kind of went through all the process. You went through the therapy. You went through I'm sure there was a grieving process and getting to kind of know everything. So that's kind of amazing. I'm so glad you're all out on the other side of that. And wow, for your son to have that kind of a role model look up to you, and you just not only in all your professional accomplishments, but to have that LGBT role model, not a lot of kids get that. So that's amazing.
Right. And it was obviously a coincidence that happened that way. But, you know, I am so glad that I can be, you know, here for him when he needs me. But again, he's a teenager right now, so he's living his teenager life. So he's dealing with his friends and he has his own agenda. But
he'll come back to dad in a couple of years, but he's got to live his life for a little bit. He doesn't want a bit too.
That's right. Now he's 17, so yes.
I can imagine. Well, I'm so excited. We're going to talk all about the Magic Castle because that's definitely the sizzle, but you're the steak, my friend. I mean, you have a fantastic career. You've served on some amazing boards. You've got certified through the CMAA and CCE and everything. Talk about going into a profession like this, working as a professional in clubs. Talk about how that came to you. What was the desire to get into that? And talk a little bit behind the schooling that goes into it to kind of make yourself a success.
So I grew up in France, and France has, you know, obviously a reputation about food and beverage. And so everything needs to be perfect. Everything needs to be, you know, immaculate, best food, best service. And I love that. I loved being in a place where everything should be the best because I really wanted to do the best, to be the best. So I attended the school in Biarritz. It's a Culinary Institute of Biarritz, which is like hospitality group. Hospitality school that specialized, you know, on hospitality management. So it was a 6 years degree. Took 2 years for me to become like either a chef or a cook. Then 2 more years to add more engineering to it and more specialty. And then 2 additional years to really add the management component, which is more the education, not only like in accounting but also marketing and sales and kind of try to group all the knowledge, to become a general manager of a hotel. So when I moved to the United States, my goal was to be general manager already with the hotel, but you cannot start from the top. You have to start from the bottom. Right. So when I moved here, yes, I had a degree, but you know, they were not impressed by my degree. You know, they wanted a busboy, and you know, so I started as a busboy. I started a food runner, a server, managers, and then director of food and beverage. And then my career kind of like grew into this job as a general manager for the first time back in 2015.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's not. It's very much a learn as you grow kind of position. You can have all that schooling. I was restaurant was one of my previous lives. I spent about 17 years in restaurant business, going the same way from a server up to a general manager and owning my own restaurant for a short time even. So yeah, there's not a lot of breaks in it. They want you to kind of learn your way into the system, but it's also a good way. You don't necessarily need the degree. Once you get in a company, they will help train you in some ways for the smaller type of restaurants, right? For chains and things.
That's right.
Very, very good. Well, let's talk about some of your, I mean, you worked at the Griffin Club, which is an amazing history in and of itself, started by Merv Griffin's uncle. And we're going to talk about your start at Magic Castle, too. You seem to be the go-to guy to get things off his feet. You kind of were jumping into the Griffin Club when they were changing from the Beverly Hills Country Club. They were kind of redoing their image and trying to update and everyone. Talk about how you came into that position and what was that like? I mean, you had construction to oversee and everything else. Goodness.
Well, you know, like when you work in hospitality, you're not worried to get dirty, right? So, you know, for me, it was just jumping, you know, what I like the most. When I was assistant general manager, you know, I wanted to be general manager, and I got this great opportunity at the Beverly Hills Country Club. But this club was, you know, definitely like a club that was needed some renovation. I don't think they touched the place in like in many years, 20, 30, 40 years. So everything was falling apart. So the group that bought it brought me on, and, you know, we had a lot of fun together. I was there for 6 years. We completed about a 20, 25 million renovation. I did a pool, renovated the entire clubhouse. I did, you know, not only like more activities for the kids, but I did an event loan, grew the catering business, fitness center. You know, tennis was a huge component as well. We had 8 tennis courts. So it was definitely a nice place, about, you know, 40,000 square feet of fitness, social, tennis, and food and beverage space that was shared among about 2,000 members.
Wow, that's amazing. And then Magic Castle comes along. It had to close down due to COVID, and it looks like you kind of came aboard right after they started to reopen. Talk about what brought you to the Magic Castle.
So, you know, like the Magic Castle was definitely like a place where, you know, most of my colleagues wanted to visit, including myself. So every time I had an idea or like of getting maybe like a friend, you know, in town, or it was always like a Magic Castle. And I knew the general manager at the time that kind of like let me in and was able to get me in like that one off, you know. And so I got very lucky to come 2 or 3 times before I started the job. But when I was ready to leave the Griffin Club, and when I saw the Magic Castle was hiring, and I was like, well, I'm very busy at the Griffin Club. Maybe it's going to be time for me to step back. And I'm like, what? It's probably like just very easy, right? So it's going to be like a club with a little bit of food and beverage, a little bit of magic, and, you know, and then we call it a day. So I was trying to kind of step back for a little bit, but at the end of the day, I think I never worked as much as the Magic Castle. Magic Castle is 5,000 members. We are extremely busy day to day. A lot of politics along with my members, staff. We had a lot of cleanup to do from the past. You know, as you can imagine, when you have a club that was started back in 1963, it's very hard, you know, obviously to follow all the traditions while at the same time, you know, coming up with following like the regulation from California and, you know, and the change of generations. So when, you know, when I first arrived, you know, I was very surprised that, you know, no policy were in place, standard operating procedures. And so it was definitely like the first year, it was definitely like a place where I was focused on especially, you know, adding a human resource department, trying to get the communication going with employees, trying to get, you know, the morale up. And especially after COVID, it was not an easy task. But little by little, you know, we hired the right people and we were able to have the same vision. And now I believe that we've definitely made some progress compared to than 3 years ago.
That's amazing. I'd have got lost when I first started. I've been there one time. There's so many little rooms and compartments and everything. It's like, I don't know how you found yourself your way around the first couple of months. That had to be a learning experience in and of itself.
It was, you know, and I just find pretty quickly that this is not about food and beverage. This is not about, you know, necessarily the building is about magic. I'm so sorry. It's about magic. This is about the art of magic. This is about the performers and what we bring to the community and to the members. This entertainment that happens every single week. We have about 13 different magicians every single week. So if you come this week, you'll be a different magician next week in every different showrooms. And we do about 500 people a night, you know, like even on Monday and Tuesday, we might do like as low as 350, but then, you know, it goes and climb up to 500, all the way until Sunday. Obviously our weekends are the busiest. We also do brunch on Saturday and Sunday, which is, adding to the 500 people. So we can do as many as 800 people on Saturday and Sunday.
Wow, that is absolutely amazing. I know what that's like, believe me, from my previous days, but just to imagine all those different rooms brings that extra element plus the entertainment value. And I can only imagine what you're going through there. Now, talk about when you first started there. I'm sure, like I said, it's steeped in such history and everything. What was your learning curve to make sure that you kind of honored the history, but also was able to kind of bring it to where you think it needed to be? Was that a challenge?
It was definitely a challenge because, you know, again, like when a place is, you know, in automatic mode for so many years, I think, you know, people in general like to block new ideas and new procedures. So it was very hard to get everyone's to buy in and to get the full consensus on people, especially when you try to change policies and procedures that have been happening for the last, you know, 60 years. Right. So I believe it was definitely like the biggest challenge I had to overcome, the communication with employees, the communication with the membership. Everybody was questioning everything I was doing. I was definitely someone that everybody was watching and see, what is he going to do now? The first year, it was very important for me to add, especially after COVID, an outside space. So we created an outdoor patio and creating an added square footage for the first time in 60 years at the Magic Castle. So now we have this beautiful outdoor patio that we use for, you know, sometimes brunch, sometimes private parties. We do cigar nights sometimes. So it's definitely something that they were not used to. And I think, you know, by building the trust with the membership the staff, we were able to do more. We had internal communication via, you know, newsletter for the employees. That never happened before. We increased in employee benefits. We increased the wages. So really try to keep up with the current trends as well as, you know, respecting all the policies and procedure that need to be respected right now in 2024. And, you know, diversity and inclusion was one of them.
I love that. And everyone resists change, no matter how good it is for them in the long run. They do tend to resist change, so I understand that. I think maybe even the video we played in the beginning showed maybe the entrance of the back patio area where you had the big rainbow balloon arch or something. So that was no such thing. Like I said, I haven't been there in 26 years was my one time I was there, I think, 26 years ago. So that sounds amazing, especially with the weather in California. You can operate a lot more longer than you can here in Northeast Ohio. That's for sure. Let's talk about some of the basics of the Magic Castle. It's definitely exclusive membership. You do have magicians and you have associates. Talk about how that has been through the time. Was that something to get used to? And is it different from some of your other clubs you've worked at? Talk about any differences or similarities in a membership type club like that.
We have the two main categories. We have the associates, you have the magicians. Magicians needs to be passing a very, I would say, challenging audition in order for them to become magician. It's not because you know a card trick that you'll be able to be a magician member. You really need to be practicing for, I would say, years. You could, you know, go through the Magic University. You could, you know, practice on your own, but you cannot be a magician at the Magic Castle of Academy of Magical Arts if you are, you don't know what you're doing. So we really, really like a focus on the art of magic, learning the art of magic, but also we're focusing on excellence. So it's very important for us to kind of demonstrate that Magic Castle is this unique place that you cannot find this Magic Castle anywhere in the world. It's the only one, unique one. We have so many members from all over the countries, but all over the world, from Japan, from Europe, anywhere. So it's a pleasure for me to work here, be able to work with so many different personalities, so many different languages and different cultures. So it's definitely different compared to my other clubs. You know, club business, it's very hit or miss, depending on the club you are. If you go to a club that has golf as, you know, as their main amenity, it would be completely different than a club with fitness or a club with, in this case, magic. So, and that's not just different. It's just like the culture is different. The people are different. And the way you use the club is different. So, to answer your original question, I never work in a place like this. It's definitely definitely keeping me on my toes.
I bet. And I love how you said, I mean, and like you said, the application's open to any magicians, whether they performed in Las Vegas or are hobbyists, but then they have to do an actual audition, right? They have to be invited by an actual magician and they have to show their tricks. It's not like someone who bought their magic kit at Disneyland and can get in there. And the rooms itself are all professional magicians. I mean, all the close-up magic. I mean, that's probably the hardest part of magic is that close-up magic, right?
And that's my favorite room. We have a close-up room downstairs that I love, and I love to go and see how they do it. And the last thing you want to do is like go on the internet and try to see if you can find out their trick, because at that point you remove the magic, you remove the hope of being like in a place that is so different and so magical, obviously, you know. So
exactly. And of course, you have the food and bar element to it. I am a huge fan of Beef Wellington, so that's what I'm getting next time I go there. I haven't had a good Beef Wellington in a long time. But the menu's amazing. Talk about having to, where do you find the chef from? And talk about, does it rotate? You have both the brunch menus on the weekends. You have the dinner menus. You have a special lunch for members on Fridays, I think it is, maybe. So talk about where the food inspiration comes from.
Actually, we had Gordon Ramsay who came in and he said that the Beef Wellington was actually very good. So I took it as a very good compliment about, you know, our chef. He was very impressed Gordon Ramsay was very impressed with our chef. So,
right.
So the chef, I know him for many years. I brought him in from my previous club, but also from the hotel I used to work back in 2004. So I worked for him at a hotel on the beach in Huntington Beach in 2004 and for 2 years. And then when I was looking for a chef at Griffin Club, I brought him in there. And when I moved over here, this is the first call that I made because he's such unbelievable. He's a great chef. He's very focused on farm to table, very focused on quality. He loves to bring a modern touch of classic cuisine, which is, you know, very hard to do. So he was able to make some immediate changes right away, specifically like when we have 500 people. Obviously, the speed is very important.
Right.
We need to make sure that, you know, 140 people are fed, you know, within 2 hours, and then they leave for a show, and then we have another 140 people, and they leave for a show again, and we have another 140 people coming in. So people have to be eat quick. So it was, I think, in the past, very challenging to be able to feed so many people. Because in addition to that, we have 5 additional bars where we get more people to come and have dinner at the bars. So this is why we have 500 people together coming in and having dinner. So we needed to kind of revamp the menu and make sense. So we came up with a regular traditional menu to more a steakhouse style to be able to feed everyone with a good quality of produce. We serve only prime beef. We have amazing organic, you know, food. We do specialize in vegan items as well, because after all, we're in Los Angeles, right?
Right, exactly.
So it was important for us to kind of feel like you're in California when you come here. But at the same time, we have to keep in mind the number of people that we feed every day to make sure that everyone leaves to attend the show on time, food is hot, and, you know, we're able to provide quality.
Well, I looked over the current menu, and it absolutely is amazing. The brunch, I can't believe how reasonably priced the brunch is and everything you get on the brunch. It's a fantastic-looking brunch. I can only imagine how good it is. Goodness, it just sounds delicious. So,
the brunch is very nice. We do have some very nice shrimp cocktail and prime rib and all the brunch items that I'm sure you'll love.
Nice. Well, we talked about it briefly, but let's get back into it just for a second. How do you balance the historical aspect of the castle, the need to have some modernization and technology, but also you want to remain that allure and exclusivity of the club? How do you find it balancing all of that? Is that a hard road to take sometimes, or how is that to kind of balance?
It is very hard, but, you know, luckily we do have a lot of committees that is really helping us. Pointing us in the right direction. It's also hard for the committees to understand what the new vision is. So we definitely need to have like clear, not only expectation from them, but also clear visions to communicate with them. So they can understand where we're going and they can point us out with the right direction. Everything is probably when you walk, you know, in this building, it's probably the same as you walk like 60 years ago, not you, but someone else. It just feel the same, probably the same smell. And that's why I think everyone likes the Academy of Magical Arts, is because it's a place where it's not spooky, it's a little bit spooky, have magic everywhere. It's darker with the lights are flickering. You see a lot of different celebrities when you walk around. We don't have, you know, we're not allowing people to take pictures. And that's from Cary Grant, that he used to be president, and he actually installed this rule, no pictures at the Magic Castle except in the lobby and outside. So you see a lot of celebrities, you know, you can be walking around and see Neil Patrick Harris, and or you can see, you know, like a Nicolas Cage. And, you know, everyone is there to have fun and have, you know, have a nice meal and go to the showrooms. We have Jason Alexander sometimes performing here. We have so many people that you recognize on a regular basis and that you feel like you're in Los Angeles, you feel like you're in Hollywood, you feel like you are part of this historical building that you frankly don't find anywhere. Where do you find, you know, white tablecloth? Where do you find, you know, like this very fine dining service? Not so many places. Everybody's kind of moving towards, you know, the casual food, more the hamburgers and the casual menu. You have maybe a couple of restaurants around the corner that have white tablecloth, but it's very, very appealing for people to go back on time and kind of experience that. Back to what you used to remember, or when I was a kid, I used to come here. And I think that makes us very special.
No, it's very well said. And like you said, there's so many restaurants now that are changing to the burger concept, but they're doing $25 burger concepts. You're for $40, you're getting a great full meal. And it just silly, I think, what some of these places have done. And you guys have kept that class and that kind of elegance to it, which I absolutely love. Speaking of that, I mean, there is a dress code, which I absolutely love. Talk about who started that tradition and how easy is that? Do people understand that when they come? Because it's up to really the magicians who invite their friends or club members that invite their friends that have to kind of share that. Has there been any experience where you've had to help someone along a little bit in the clothing department?
It happens nightly, every single day. You know, we do not allow anybody that are not on dress code. So, you know, when you look into the Yelp review, we mostly get great comments, except the one star we get are people that are not happy because they had to leave because they were not on dress code. And I think it makes us different again with that white tablecloth example I gave you earlier. Where do you find, you know, like a place where you have to dress up for dinner and for shows? Nowhere really in Los Angeles. So the dress code was, I think, started right at the beginning of 1963 when the Milt Larson, which is the founder, created the Academy of Magical Arts. It kind of brought that dress code along, and we had to respect that dress code in order for the guests to come and enjoy the Magic Castle. That never left. I think it became a staple of what we are today. So I know the floor managers are getting yelled at every day downstairs because, you know, people say, hey, you know, I have a $250 pair of jeans. Why don't they let me in? Well, jeans are not a lot, sir. But they're $250. Doesn't matter. The jeans are not a lot, sir. So it is very hard for different generation now, the newer generation, to understand why we should have a dress code to begin with.
I love it. It's so old Hollywood and the Hollywood Hills. I think you need that kind of piece of class that it brings to it. So I love that. And you talked about the Academy of Magical Arts. I mean, this actually is a clubhouse, basically, for magicians, right? That's kind of one of the original things of it. So there's a board of directors and some advisors and everything. How is that working with that group? Is it kind of a great partnership to have someone to run things by? Is it kind of like an overlord thing where it's a little scary sometimes? Talk about running with the board and how that is to manage the club aspect to the restaurant and the enjoyable kind of experience aspect.
The best part is, so we have two boards. We have the board of nine people, which is the board of director, and we have a board of trustees, which is a board with seven people. Board of trustees guide us with the magic. So they'll be, you know, helping picking magicians. There will be the one that are going to be really focused on what's good and bad for the magic long term. The board of directors are the final decision. They are focused on the governance. For me, as a general manager, I'm also a chief operating officer, so I take care of the operations. So we all have duties. I report to the board. The trustees report to the board, but we all have defined tasks that, you know, I do operation, they do magic, and then the board of director kind of look more at governance and long-term strategies.
I love that. Well, the Magic Castle, of course, it's shrouded in mystery and tradition we've been talking about. Can you reveal any behind-the-scenes stories that might surprise the listeners of things that just have happened that organic that you were just really shocked to see and excited to see?
You know, at the Magic Castle, we do not reveal secrets.
Well, I don't want a magic trick secret, but just anything, any experience that something had happened in the club that was just unexpected, something that happened just kind of organically that was exciting to you.
You know, when we have celebrities, it's always exciting. You know, we do have seance that happens, you know, quite frequently. And I think that's what's, you know, like not amuse me, but kind of makes me smile every day because I see people reaction on seances. When, you know, like we have Houdini coming back to guests, and they are obviously like reacting with a lot of movement and screams and you know, the tables are moving, and it's definitely some fun. We do have some fun gags everywhere in the castle. We do have a place where, you know, we are inside the toilets or inside the bathroom. There is like a phone where you can press the button and then it's like you hear like the airport sound or you hear the train station. So that was made for guys to call their wife next to them and say, hey, you know, I'm a train station, I'm coming home. But really, they were at the Magic Castle. So we have a gag that, you know, we have a stool that's sink down. And, you know, when you have like a nice drink with your friend, all of a sudden you find yourself down below and you don't know what just happened. We do have Irma. Irma is our guest pianist. And you can talk to her. She's a ghost. And she can hear you. She can talk to you with music, and she'll be communicating with every guest around the night. She'll tell us how she feels, if she's tired, if she's happy. She'll make some very cool music that kind of like creates a different experience for our guest.
I love that. That is amazing. Well, talk about what your goals are. I'm sure you kind of set different goals for each year. What are you looking forward in maybe either not the next evolution, but what are you looking for to kind of incorporate into bringing this experience to maybe even another level or just to keep as is? What's your really goals for your position?
So my own personal goal, and that's obviously not discussed with any boards, but I want to kind of bring the Magic Castle to different outside the Magic Castle. So, you know, what about if we do outside catering? We could, you know, go to a mansion in Bel Air or in Beverly Hills and then put, like, bring the Magic Castle to those, you know, mansion that, you know, wants to have 20 people, 30 people, 100 people outside. And we could do our own catering, bring the magicians, bring the Biff Wellington. Bring entertainment to them and really create the Magic Castle experience. You know, that would be
like a pop-up shop almost. That's amazing. Yeah, that's amazing.
Exactly. The Magic Castle catering, yes.
That's
a very personal goal of mine, yes.
One of my favorite things in New York is they have the, I forget exactly what they call it. I don't know if it's called the White Tablecloth Society or something, but you find out once a month, you find out the day before where they're going to have a rooftop dining experience. And everyone dresses all in white, and it's a pop-up on a rooftop restaurant. I think those things are amazing to have. So, yeah, that sounds great. Well, Hervé, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for sharing the Magic Castle journey and your amazing journey through your career. Thanks so much for being on the Leftist Trade Show, my friend.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you so much.
Let everyone know the website so they can kind of learn a little bit more about the history of the Magic Castle and maybe even get there themselves someday. Talk about that and where they can find it on social media.
You just have to go to magiccastle.com, and we do have our Instagram page as well, which is under Magic Castle. So we are very easy to find, but we are the hardest place to get in. So, you can start that way.
I love that. Hervé Livé, I appreciate you so much coming on the Leftist Trade Show. Stay on the line for me. Guys, we're going to have a special 5 questions with Hervé next week, so be sure to look for that. If you're in the Los Angeles area, just if you drive by on Franklin, you can just see the majesty of it up on the hill there. Look for the Magic Castle. Try to find a way in because you're not going to regret it, that's for sure. It's a little difficult, but if you can, you're going to enjoy the amazing experience. Thanks so much for listening to Leftist Trade Show. Be sure to listen to us every day. Give us a little thumbs up or a 5-star rating on Apple iTunes. And we will see you next time right here on the Leftist Trade Show interviews. Bye-bye.
Well, hey, guys, I hope you enjoyed today's Leftist Trade interviews with our special guest, Hervé Livé from the Magic Castle. I've been there one time many years ago when I lived in L.A., and I'm really hoping to get back there when I do the Big Gay Road Trip in July, so I'm looking forward to that. As always, I appreciate you listening every day to Leftist Trade Podcast, available Monday through Friday. Be sure to check it out on social media, and you can always look at our webpage, www.leftistrade.com. Hope you have a great weekend coming up, and we'll see you next time right here on Left to Straight Interviews. Bye-bye.